Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
This is a Lip Media podcast.
The gays are ascending on Australia.
Josh Thomas brings his comedy show Whoopsie Daisy down under this October, kicking off on the north coast of New South Wales in beautiful Brunswick Heads, where, of course, they film Sea Change.
Oh, yeah.
Before taking in Sydney, Melbourne, Canberra, Cairns, Brisbane and Perth.
Hannah Gatsby's follow-up to Nanette is Douglas, which lands in December, touring Melbourne, Hobart, Canberra, Sydney and Brisbane before jumping short in New Zealand.
And An Evening with David Sedaris sees the brilliant American author visit Brisbane, Sydney, Melbourne, Adelaide and Canberra in January.
Go to comedy.com.au for full touring details and to book tickets.
We acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which we are recording. We pay our respect to elders past and present and the Aboriginal elders of other communities who may be listening today.
You ready? Great. You ready?
Has this started?
I just have to do my intro. Welcome to the...
What's one of those professional podcasts where you have to listen to all the bullshit at the start?
I mean, it's very clever, but it doesn't have the warmth of analog.
No. And it's not interrupted every 3 minutes
that's
by Lady Gaga.
That's the trouble with sobriety.
Just we're definitely leaving this all in.
Sorry, talking, young man.
Thank you. Welcome to The Gays Revolting, a definitive weekly news source for contemporary gays. We put the G in LGBTQIA+, and we're here to help you be the best G you can be. You can follow us on Instagram at GaysRevoltingPod or join our Facebook at The Gays Revolting. And if you'd like to support the podcast and listen to our after shows, head over to patreon.com/GaysRevoltingPod for a heap of extra content. My name's Thomas Jaspers, and at high school I was voted most likely to prolapse by the age of 30. Now, I'm very excited about this episode. This is something I've wanted to do for about a year today.
However, the one you actually prolapsed in. You actually prolapsed live on air.
I've been wanting to do it for a year. Someone get the shoehorn
to push it back in when he's done.
And I've already lost control and haven't even introduced you assholes. In this very, very special episode, we are joined by the outrageous Scott Brennan, the fabulous Adam Richard, and the punctual Toby Sullivan
of the original queer Australian
podcast Talking Puffy. Now, you boys, I'm so thrilled to have you here. Thanks for coming in.
I think you should reserve your thanks until the end of the episode.
Yes.
I think that... Yep.
Poor
you
Dan's
know,
got steam coming out of his ears.
Poor producer.
As I always used to say, you know, back in the day, if you're listening, if you've chosen to listen to Talking Puffy, you fucking deserve to hear it.
Yes, exactly.
On your own heads, be it.
Yes.
Girls.
Yeah.
And you know what? We'll have to post something when we announce this episode. It's going to be fucking awful and offensive. But you know what? If you've gotten through this far, you're going to be fine.
Yeah. But also, we're old people, and old people are conservative.
I know.
By
we've had to record
nature.
This episode at 11 o'clock in the morning just to make sure you're all up. Well,
yeah, no. Isn't it great how when you're old and you do something clearly politically incorrect, people just go, well, they're a bit old.
They're a bit old. And that's the warning for the podcast. Yeah.
But we've always just done it. We haven't had that excuse before.
Well,
though.
We didn't have that excuse before, no. But that was before me too.
Also, like, let's just be clear, the podcast only ended 5 years ago. Like, we're not talking 20 years
Did
ago.
It? Is it five?
Nearly five,
oh,
yeah.
It feels like a blissful decade.
Time flies when you're having fun.
Now felt like 5 years every time I tried to edit one.
It's what it's like trying to listen to the fucking things.
Do you know what? You know what the trouble was with your editing, actually? I've always wanted to make this remark. Was that you never left anything out. You would just reorder things. If something was shit, you wouldn't just snip it out entirely. Which
content
is
king.
Editing. You would just put it into a whole new, like... omnibus of shit episode.
Because then we would have to record more if I cut things out.
Do you leave stuff out in Gays of Revolting? Is there stuff?
Yeah, we record for like 2 hours, but most of it's just Luke bragging about himself, so we just cut that shit out. We're left with an hour, yeah.
You need like a Luke bragging about himself mega mix or something at some point.
Come on, everybody. I used to cut out every second time Scott said that was my nickname in high school.
Yeah, right.
I didn't want him to sound repetitive.
No.
Should we just assume that anyone who is still listening knows... like what the fuck we're talking about.
Well,
like,
it's the first question I was going to ask you, which I haven't got to yet, was okay. Talking Puffy, iconic podcast. The amount of people that
you
have
only
listened
liked
to
it because you were on it.
Oh, thank you. No, but I was listening to it before I knew any of you, and loved it before I knew any of you, and then I got to know you. And
yeah,
I got,
but that's because you were fucking our friends.
Yeah, true.
Okay. Trying to fuck your way to stardom.
Yeah, all right. And hey,
hooking up with everyone.
Look how well I did.
Terrible plugs in the industry.
Hey, terrible plugs. I'm right here. I can hear you when you talk about me.
For people that, for maybe some of our younger listeners
who've all turned off by now, so they don't care.
What was the Talking Puffy, the Puffcast?
The idea kind of was to talk about kind of gay stuff, but talk about the reality of it.
Yes.
Yes. And not that, because, you know, I guess it's kind of different now a little bit, but at the time, the only image that people had in the wider community.
No, it's not different now.
Like, gay people.
I honestly don't believe that Joel Creasy has ever had sex with another man.
He has, like, but they've all been Ken dolls.
Yeah. Yeah. They're all equally.
He's, but, whatever, you know, he's whatever the opposite of a beard is.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's a blade.
Oh, but the only image that kind of people had of gay men was Queer Eye for the Straight Guy, the original series.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And,
yeah.
And, you know,
or
Will
Mr.
and Grace,
Humphreys,
and all that kind of stuff. And there wasn't, you know, that information about, you know, what we're actually like. And the, look around. Look at us. We're filthy.
Awful people.
Oh, just sad, horrible, gross. Yeah,
that's why I haven't spoken to any of you in 5 years.
Yeah, yeah. That's
podcast
true.
Podcast ended.
So we kind of wanted to just talk about the reality, the nitty gritty, you know, from amyl to kind of beats to anal sex to whatever. Like,
absolutely,
all the kind of, you know, stuff that
but you know what? You play it down and, okay, I won't blow smoke up your ass because... I wouldn't be able to fill it. So,
Yeah.
But you talk about it like it wasn't that big a deal. It was. A lot of people that talk about now, like how far we've come and that sort of stuff, a lot of people put that down to the fact that we finally started getting real images of ourselves in the media.
Yes.
And to have access, I mean, that's why I was listening to, I remember the episode you talked about douching before I'd been on it. And to have someone actually saying that, especially in Australian accents, was a big deal. Like, there was
they're
no one else
Swedish.
That was actually...
Yeah, douching. Yeah.
There was no one talking about real shit. Well, I mean, it was funny as well, which is
well,
good to listen to. But
if you have real shit, that's what the douching is for. It's to get rid of all.
There's a podcast. Real shit.
Real
just
shit.
An entire podcast about douching.
I mean, I suppose I could, at the time, I suppose we could tell that we had struck some kind of a chord because of the sincerity of some of the correspondence we received, and also some of the fucking idiocy of the correspondence.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
One of my favourite moments was when some delightful twink barreled up to me at Broadway in Sydney at Target.
Oh.
When I was buying, you know, several
towels.
No, they look like towels, but it was my t-shirts. Several 4XL t-shirts. And this twink is like, "Hey, Adam Richard from Talking Puffy." I was like, "Yes, yes, that's me. What do you want? A gobby." And he's like, "Oh, you girls make me feel so much better about myself. And I feel like such a slut when I listen to your show." So we're just enabling slutting.
That's right.
No, but which is like, important.
I kind of got told secondhand that a friend of mine said that a friend of his was talking about how he grew up in the country and would listen to Talking Puffy.
Yeah.
And my friend told me when he was talking about how important Talking Puffy was him because he felt was to him because he felt so isolated out in the country.
Yeah.
He was actually getting a bit teary.
Yeah.
Like talking about how important it was to just kind of hear all this stuff and know he wasn't alone. And I kind
you're
of went,
upsetting
oh,
Toby.
Really
you know he
sad.
Hates sincerity.
I cannot take did, on any of this response.
No, it did. Yes. But at the time, if we'd known this at the time,
yeah.
It would have freaked us
yeah,
out.
Yeah, it's probably good that you'd
like
know that.
Yeah, because you know we would have felt that responsibility. Yeah. And like, oh shit, people are actually paying attention.
Yeah, I think that's true. We would have second guessed ourselves.
Yeah,
is this the
totally.
Sort of thing we should be
I
saying.
I did get those
whatever.
Emails, but I just never passed them along to you two because you're cynical.
And it didn't matter to you because you're a psychopath.
Yeah.
That was also evident in, I mean, I remember going out with all three of you to what was open at the time.
You
Prince
remember
of
that?
Wales.
I don't remember that. I don't remember going out.
But going out
spending
places
any
like
time
DTs
with a child.
Wales and that sort of shit. And yeah. And people come up to you and recognise. And also, you know, your live shows did incredibly well. People loved it. It was fantastic.
Our live shows, please don't bring those up.
They were a fucking train wreck, but people went to them.
We sexually harassed many poor straight people.
Yeah.
Who I touched on the dick several times.
And he was like whispering to you on stage like, fucking cut it. But do you also remember that time we nearly took, like there was
a
posse of boys and we nearly took them home?
Oh no, there was just one that I think we
were. Yeah, there was one who was like teetering.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know? And then you very sensibly brought up the fact that, you know, we couldn't because we'd make eye contact in the middle of spit roasting him and it would all be over.
Wow. And that was the only
and
reason.
And you had to go and sing something somewhere, so you left us with them.
Oh, the God. Live shows were really terrible. But we didn't set out to do it with that in mind.
No, because it originally started, am I right in thinking, it originally started just as a live show and then you turned it into a podcast?
No, it started as a hangover.
Right.
Yes, true.
I was hosting and these two faggots were delightful support acts to Sue Ann Post, who was the Hannah Gadsby of our time. Right. And all of Adelaide's lesbian community turned out to see Sue Ann.
Right.
And none of us wanted to have anything to do with any of us.
Yeah.
So we had some difficult gigs.
Right. So interesting.
Because they're generous people, the lesbians.
And then Sue Ann got on and would like shift a foot and they'd applaud. Like, yeah, right, just, yeah. Yeah, they
like,
would lose their
Yeah, she would she would just wander across the stage.
We had these terrible gigs and we were marooned in Adelaide. So we went out and were like horrendously drunk. Like
at the Mars Bar.
You can imagine.
Yeah, yeah. Right? Oh, the Mars Bar, R.I.P.
Here's to absent friends.
and million and one disco ball.
And
where are they
and
now?
Somehow, I don't actually remember this because I have pretty bad hangovers, but the legend, the origin story is that sitting around the next day, out of some like unfortunate collision of misery and circumstance.
Didn't we just get like hammered after the gig and were just doing a show on stage, possibly just for Justin Hamilton?
Actually, there is a foggy memory of that. And Justin coming out and doing like a drag number to like Pearl Jam or something.
That's right.
In the middle of it.
And so basically we were discovered, Thomas.
But we'd been doing it on and off as like a stand-up spot.
Yeah.
For about, I don't know, 8 or 9 years.
Right.
And then, you know, it was 2009. You know.
Well, that's the thing. So my producer tells me that in 2010, which is, or you said 2009?
I don't know.
I think it was till 2010.
I was pretty much drunk
2%
for about 4 years.
2% of the Australian population knew what the word podcast meant.
Yes.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. What made you decide to turn it into a podcast?
That was an interview. So,
because we were part of the 98%. We didn't know what we were
doing. I had no idea.
We thought it was a party.
I just knew I had a studio at work and there was a bottle shop downstairs. Like that was all really that had.
Because you were recording in the Fox Studios, correct?
Yeah. We did an interview with DNA magazine and this delightfully.
Who was the front page?
None of us.
Tina Del Twist.
Tina Del Twist in her bathers. It was meant to be an interview with a bunch of Melbourne comedians, but we were the only ones there.
Right.
The journo had been flown down to do a story in like Marvellous Melbourne.
A travelogue thing.
It was a travelogue in Melbourne. Yeah. So the deal was he was going to have lunch at his hotel with Talking Puffy and then go to a laneway or have a coffee or like read a book or something. All those
go
things.
Go and see Bjorn again at the theatre.
All that kind of stuff. But we got him so drunk at lunch he basically had to trash the whole story.
Oh, shit.
Oh, no, he ended up writing the story, but he was just drunk.
But the story was about we went from lunch, then we had drinks at the Exchange, and then I passed out and I woke up lying in an aisle at the Comedy Theatre in the middle of a Bjorn Again concert.
Richard Rimminger, yes.
No, I was doing Amel on the balcony at the Comedy Theatre.
Adam, do you remember... Oh, God, this is like...
Probably not. Go
8 years ago when you were still drinking and Joel Creasy wasn't famous yet and I was guesting on the podcast and we went to the Prince of Wales when we used to do drag shows there.
And I spilled Amel on my pants.
Yeah, Monty Di Monty, the drag queen, was doing a show, so she invited us backstage. So it was you, me, Monty Di Monty, and I think Paris or something like that.
Yes.
And Joel Creasy. And you spilled a bottle of Amel on your pants. It was the last bottle anyone had.
Oh, no.
So Joel Creasy and I were on our hands and knees just sniffing
literally
your jeans.
One at a time.
And the girls came off stage. The girls came off stage and Joel and I were on all fours just sniffing Adam's legs.
Oh, my God.
And I spilt it right near my dick.
Yeah.
It was such an ass.
That is like a really disgusting 70s German movie.
I know.
Or it was a scene from the Bohemian Rhapsody.
And in the next edition, I've never been so proud. There were like half a dozen letters from people going, "That is a disgusting impression.
Yes.
What kind of an image are we sending out to like straight people?"
Oh, what fucking straight people are reading DNA?
Know.
And also, you know what? Yeah, if you want to live that life, like have you non-drinking, no offense, Adam, but you know, people are allowed to party and get drunk and get messy and have a fun time.
Hell yeah.
It happens. Yeah. It happens.
I've and also, it, he fucked Scott, which happens all the time. Like, anytime we would go out with anyone, like my friends would come down from Sydney, Toby would have some old school friend turn up, we'd all be out.
Yeah.
And at the end of the night, Scott would fuck them.
Yeah.
It was part of the ticket price, guys.
Right? It was a travel blog. You've got to see the sights of Melbourne. You've got to see Scott Brennan's bedroom. Yeah.
The journalist wasn't even gay in the end. He went back in.
He actually did. There's probably a reason for that, too.
Yeah. Well, he decided, if I'm going to fuck something this sloppy, I might as well be having sex with a woman. Oh.
No, he just knew he was never going to get any better.
Touché.
Hey.
Touché.
Thank you.
Now, I got to guest on your podcast, and it was so lovely, and it led to some of my first ever guests.
We were scraping the bottom of the barrel by the time you were on.
Probably regret it now.
No. Tom was very funny. We had a lot of guests, and some of them were shit, but Tom was good.
That's why you kept coming back.
Yeah, exactly.
Tom was good. Velvo was good. Reese was pretty good.
Also, Buttle was good. Remember, he used to have fun stories about being locked out all the time.
Yeah. Oh, my God. I was re-listening to that episode the other day. Remember when I got locked? Scott Brennan and I lived together for a while, and remember when I got locked out of the house and all I had was a white t-shirt on the line and my Rhonda Butchmore outfit
like
that was
Liza
in the, and it was like a Liza Minnelli, and I had to go to the police station dressed like Liza Minnelli because it was all the clothes that we had in the garage of my drag costumes.
Sure it is, son. Tell it to the judge.
And I had to come and pick the... You were recording at the time, and I had to come and pick
in
the keys
Melbourne
up.
In Melbourne Central for some stupid reason.
So I had to come and pick the keys up so you got me on the episode.
To tell the story. We had no content. We'd run out by then.
Yeah, that was fantastic.
We ran out in episode two.
So I learned a lot from you guys. But we do our episodes once a week. Mm-hmm. But you guys used to record in bulk. Yes. And I'd like pop in for an episode, and, you know, Wes would pop in for an episode. But you guys would be sitting there. How long did you record
it
for?
It would just go for hours.
Nine hours?
We'd start just before lunch and we'd go until like 10 or...
Which is amazing because, like, you can tell, I mean, people listening would already know how high energy you guys are. What drugs were you taking?
Alcohol.
Mostly Moet and Chandon.
Yeah, we would.
I do apologise about the very cheap red wine we've served.
Do you remember the episode where I was so hungover at the start that I had to go and have a hip flask of Jack Daniels to start the podcast?
Oh, my God.
and you've gone, oh, man, that stinks. I'm like, just let me be.
Oh, my God.
I can't speak English.
Honestly,
do you know, this will probably get cut out, but a few weeks ago we had the lovely Beck Shaw, who you're friends with.
Yes,
Adam,
she's,
on
she's
the episode,
one of my
And
employees.
I've never called in. The only time I've ever called in sick to this podcast was when my dog went missing.
Oh.
And that episode, I went to the Melbourne Drag Awards the night before, and Karen from Finance got me very fucked up.
Oh.
And
I love how it's always someone else's fault with Jack.
Yes.
So I tried to call in sick that night, and our producer Dan said, well, we've got, you know, Beck Shaw and Will Kostakis on the episode tonight, so if you're not coming in, we'll just have to cancel. And I was like, well, we can't do that. So I dragged myself in here, and I reckon I sat here, I did the intro, let them talk for about an hour, and then I just said goodbye at the end of the episode.
Oh.
And I was sitting here sweating, and Will was like this guest who I've never met before, this wonderful author who was down for the Melbourne Writers Festival, was like passing me tissues to dab the sweat off my face, and I was like tuning out.
This is why we did all of our interviews on the phone.
Yes.
Yeah.
I had a very similar experience after one Talking Poofy record, because I was producing at the time, and I had been out till like 5:30, like whatever.
We went to a karaoke bar.
So the only place we could get a drink was like a...
And
like
we couldn't get out of the city. We were trapped in there.
So it was like a K-box in Chinatown. So
yes. That was kind of awesome.
It was really fun.
It was a really great night.
And we'd had our tech run that day. Like, we'd been with each other all day. We'd done the show, and then we still... foolishly went out until like 6 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
So we roll out of a K-box at 6 o'clock in the morning, and I've got like a 9:30 matinee of the listies. So I'm like ushering in children with exactly that same experience, like sweat, like booze sweat pouring out of me, having to like duck out to the bathrooms to spew. Finally, my co-producer came and just tapped me on the shoulder and just said, you need to not be near children.
Yeah.
You smell like Santa.
Yeah. Yeah.
But with
I
all
went
this
home
in mind,
and ate toast for 4 days.
It is so weird that people actually listen to our podcast to get information. Like, we know nothing. Like,
we know just... nothing. Oh, but we used to get people in. Like, we'd get Colin Bettruni in to talk about, like, he was our sexpert.
He was.
He was. We used to get
Paul
really Horan.
Yeah, I mean,
there
was like wonderful information about, like, how to get STI tests and stuff like that. Like,
yeah. This is the thing. Like, I was doing Brekkie Radio at the time, and the best information we could give was, you know, where to pick up an icy cold can of Coke and a bag of chips.
Yeah, right.
Thunder.
And you were like, well, here's where you can get, you know, some antibiotics. Yeah.
And I knew that broadcasting could be more than that, but still be fun.
Yeah.
And so I kind of wanted to do more and hang out with these two, because I've always felt that as funny as I am, and I'm very funny, like we were all funnier than the sum of our parts. Like, yeah, right. we would have so much fun doing it.
Because in terms of podcasts, like at the time, that was the golden age of like two guys called Dave just talking shit with Garrett. Yeah.
So many.
And there were all these podcasts.
They're still on. You know, people still listen to them.
Oh, look, I'm sure the same episode is still running.
Yeah.
5 years later.
You've heard the Sydney Gays then, yeah.
There were all these like comedy podcasts that had no structure and were just completely improvised. I think the real innovation of Talking Puffy in that sense was that we were one of the early ones to have a really clearly defined commercial radio structure.
Yeah.
As much as you took great care to make sure that nothing went for longer than 7 minutes.
Yeah.
And there was lots of ear candy. We would go to such trouble to make those bumpers.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know, in between
things. I just made Scott do that because he had to do something.
And, and we would have
besides
guests.
Besides
like,
when I wasn't
we really
fucking, I was
gave,
recording stuff.
We invested energy in putting scaffolding around our own unique genius.
Yeah, but there's also something very beautiful about like making it entertaining and funny, but then putting in some really important information. And also, you know, podcasts is one of the first times where you could reach a mass audience without having to be signed up to a radio station. So, you know, you'd worked in radio for years, but you were never going to get something like Talking Puffy on the air.
Well wasn't it? Didn't
we nearly
listen?
Did.
Yeah.
Really?
Yes.
When they
ABC Radio 2.
No.
No.
When all those stupid digital licenses came in, Austereo bought like 12 of them, and one of them they decided was just going to be a comedy channel. Just comedy all the time. I'm like, that is a lot of fucking content, 24 hours a day. So they got a whole bunch of podcasts on, like they were playing the Dumb Dumb Club and things like that. And the head of it, who was in Sydney, was like, oh, Adam, we want to put on the Puffcast. I'm like, you should listen to it.
Yeah, yeah, probably listen to it
and
first.
Then tell me you want to put it on. And he's had a listen and he's gone, it is the best produced podcast of any podcast in this country, but it breaches 18 different broadcasting codes.
Like, he'd listen to the first 5 minutes or something, and we'd already broken, like, 18 rules. So
we'd defamed people.
We'd literally unbroadcast
people.
Now, you mentioned some of the guests that you had. To recap, some of the regulars, Mel Buttle, the bottom whisperer.
She was very, very Mel good. Buttle. We had Mel so before well. She was a Bake Off.
That's right. And she would, we would...
Actually, you had quite a few people on before they were well-known. Oh, yeah. Reese Nicholson as well.
Well, back in the old days, Toby was a manager and he used to look after them.
Right. Oh, yeah. Yeah. An unsuccessful manager.
But Mel Buttle,
feathering his own nest.
We would call Mel Buttle and just give them two like celebrity names, like, particularly a celebrity couple, and she would decide who was the top and who was the bottom in that relationship.
And she's turned out to be gay. So, you know, that she wasn't gay at the time, but now she is. So, you know, maybe she caught it off.
Well, you know who else wasn't gay when we had them on was Geraldine Hickey.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's true.
I didn't know that she wasn't. She was not gay at the time. I think she was bi for a little while, and... It was in a conversation with us that she said, she was getting on a tram and we're like, where are you going? Toby's like, where are you going? And she's like, oh, I'm just off to a knitting festival in Northgate.
Oh.
And Toby's gone, that was bound to happen sooner or later.
Well, there's also, you had Velvo as well.
Yeah.
Oh, no, he was always
Snelling
gay.
Was more of a sometimes host than a guest.
Yeah. Velvo was funny. Oh, yeah. My
really
God.
Funny.
Like, he's still funny now.
Is,
but, you know, he was like a racehorse. Like,
yes.
In terms of the natural talent of someone who can just, like...
Yeah, but he's been, like, nominated for awards in Edinburgh, so he's dead to us now.
Yeah.
I remember once there was, like, neither of you were available, so I just dragged Velvo in for a recording. It's like, let's just record one. And he spent the entire time kind of, you know, reverse flirting. Where you are assuming someone is coming on to you and so you just read everything they say as like something lecherous. It's like, I can think of no one I would less rather have near my penis than fucking that ferret.
That's how Velvo, that's how he got his beautiful boyfriend, I assume.
Like just
reverse
him. Just by being nasty. He negged him into fucking
Scott,
him.
Do you remember that time at the Peel after a record when Velvo said to you, Scotty...
Oh, yes. It was,
what
it was
the exact
like,
phrase?
It was, if I didn't think that I would die in a month, I'd totally do you, Scott.
The one I remember the most fondly, I think, for, you know, bizarre selfish reasons was, do you remember when we spoke to the guys who organised the San Francisco Wank Club?
Yes!
Oh.
And they were shit. They were terrible. They were the worst talent God ever put breath into, and I absolutely include myself in that statement, right? They were worse than watching... Listening to them talk was worse than watching paint dry, right? Because when you watch paint dry, it starts wet, right? These were the absolute pits.
Oh.
But somehow... it edits it up into a really funny amazing segment. Yeah. And we were sitting there, like, dragging our nails down our face. Yeah, like, this is like palliative radio. How are we ever going
to
get
anything? Also, for something that's meant to be slightly titillating and possibly erotic, they made it sound like the most boring fucking experience.
They made it sound like
world.
A Roomba was coming around and jerking me off.
I used to like all the characters and stuff.
Yeah,
and like
that's
Lorna and
was
Lorna.
You.
Well, Lorna and Lorna, I have.
Oh, Lorna and Lorna were the best.
For, who would always? They'd always have the same recipe.
I was going to ask about some of the characters. So, for people that aren't familiar with the podcast, you'd every now and then have characters that some of you or you know Wes would play.
Yeah. We talked to Jesus. Okay,
yes,
oh Jesus,
he was Prolapse, who was a rancid old drag queen.
Yes, yes. Prolapse. There was Constable Troy. If we
Constable
needed a
Troy.
Police.
Now, Constable Troy was the LGBTI liaison officer with the police, and he would always talk about how he got hired because the gays knew the toilets at the petrol station better than the straights.
Yeah.
Do you remember the time we rang a bunch of different call centres and there were different Troys working at all?
Oh, yeah, it was all just Troys.
Amazing.
Yeah. And they all knew that you were going to call.
And they all knew the other Troys.
Yeah. I've been talking to Troy. Oh, my God. How is he?
Where did the characters come from? Like,
we were drunk.
Yeah,
and we were just. I would run out and be outside of the studio on the phone, and they'd call and they'd just go and I'd do something.
And Scott's an improviser. Like, that's his best skill was just like, let's ask him questions and see what the fuck comes out of
yeah,
him.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well,
so
one of
we never prepared those.
Yeah, right. It was amazing. Easier. That was so fucking funny. Well, one of my favorite characters was Grunty McFuckery.
Oh, that was a lot of preparation.
Which was Toby. Yes. Now, for people that aren't familiar, Grunty McFuckering, I'm not going to say he might be based on an Australian gay bar owner, but he's based
on all of them.
He was a very a wealthy gay bar owner who was a bit of an asshole and liked to fuck
a lovable asshole
that liked to fuck his patrons over, shall we say, and his guests and everyone else.
And fuck his staff.
And fuck his staff and was pretty much just an awful,
Not often consensually. He was the Weinstein of the bar industry.
Exactly. Where did he come from?
Grunty was actually not based on a gay bar owner.
But he was a gay bar owner. But he was
like the character was a gay bar owner. But where
what was the name of his bar? Grunty's bar?
Wrongens.
Wrongens.
We had to look that up. We'd forgotten, but it was called Wrongens. And you know what else I remembered? He had a brother called Chunky McFuckery.
Oh, who was an abuse.
And we would just be like Adam and I would like when Grunty was talking, we would like have our fists in our mouths trying not to laugh with tears running down our cheeks.
Grunty was legitimately based on a guy called Warwick, who used to manage the Metro nightclub in Bourke Street. And through some chain of events, it was this huge bar, huge beer palace, like thousands and thousands of people in capacity.
Yeah.
And in some chain of circumstances, I was like met him at a party or something like that. And someone said, oh, so Warwick, you know, what are you going to do at the Metro for New Year's Eve? And he leans back and goes, what am I going to do? I'm going to do the same fucking shit as every Saturday night, charge triple the price at the door and sell beer for $14. That's what I'm going to fucking do. I was like, that's smart.
I'm so excited, Toby, because you've organised a special appearance for us.
Oh, I can't.
By Grunty McFuckering, haven't you?
I can't look at Grunty. Grunty
it's very true.
This
Grunty,
is very exciting. Grunty McFuckering has not been heard of for five years. A lot has happened in the gay scene in 5 years, and I'm so excited.
Yeah. Jasper, because you've decided to have us here, we are contractually obliged to also have our sponsor from Wrongens, the chain of bistros and chicken schnitzel outlets. Grunty McFuckering. Hey, Grunty.
Yay! Well, Jesus, cock-smoking Christ on the cross. I thought I'd seen the last of you disgusting pensioners 5 years ago when I threw you out of the front bar and screamed at you to fuck off. Then rang you in the cab to tell you to fuck off on speakerphone. Then sent each of you literally hundreds of text messages the next day with the text, fuck off. And then hired the Whitman's blimp to literally land on the roofs of the blighted rat shacks use wizened scrotal impersonators call home, trailing a 40-foot vinyl banner spelling out F-U-C-K-O-F-F the fuck off.
I remember that blimp.
Yet here we are, you shite sacks are back at it like some kind of auditory herpes to curse me twice. What the fuck have I ever done to deserve this? Don't answer that. I actually know full well you can't judge me. My choices are between me and my God, who, by the way, doesn't exist. So why the fuck are we constantly panicked about what the fuck that spectral nonce and his army of mild-mannered, frock-coated pederasts think? But anyway... In the interim, a lot has happened, that's for sure. We've got Donald Trump as president. Yes. What a good girl she is. Bit heavy on the slap. Must be hot in summertime. But anyway, I knew her back in the day.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. As I remember, she me-too'd me with a copy of The Art of the Deal. What else happened? Some piece of digital shit invented emojis. That's fucking fantastic.
Oh, no.
Yeah, that clamshell can stick his eggplant up his fucking peaches, as far as I'm concerned. Oh, and I moved to Sydney to open a new branch of my highly successful community facility, Wrongens in Rudy Hill. I realise it's a bit further out, but oops, so am I nowadays. I was innovating yet again. With Australia's first gay bar and car detailing service with a back room.
With a back room?
It's a one-stop shop. However, that city's draconian licensing laws have seen me fall on hard times.
Oh, grunty.
Faggot, play the cello thing in the The recent lifting of the lockout laws, however, were not the panacea I was hoping for, as the child slavery laws are still in full force, so I've had to let bung out of the basement. So tonight I am launching a new charity campaign, modelled after the Make-A-Wish Foundation, entitled the Throw a Cunner Bone Foundation. Following the format of popular websites such as Kickstarter, Patreon, and RedTube, you can make a purely spontaneous donation to my cause and help support me in my dotage. Face it, it's either that or I start Australia's first Hannah Gadsby tribute band, Flannelette. Visit me at grunty.com.fucking-u.a.fucking get your kid to work out or some fucking... Bullshit.
See you, Grunty. See you, Grunty. Thank you, Grunty. Oh, fucking hell.
Oh, wow.
He is hideous.
There is a reason why we don't have him anymore.
He is absolutely hideous. God.
I have seen that Hannah Gadsby tribute act, though. It's very good.
Oh, very good. Believable, yeah.
I mean, there's no jokes in it, and she's got green hair, but it's, you know, very earnest, which I enjoy.
You know, this is like, actually, I know that the shtick, right, is that we're a million years old and fuck us, you know, on death's door. But actually, this is an intensely millennial experience. To make a really trivial achievement that matters to no one and then revisit it again and again, like you've invented the fucking light bulb.
Three of the biggest queer names in comedy are touring Australia from October this year.
Josh Thomas is returning home to Australia for his first live show since the global success of multi-award winning series Please Like Me. Whoopsie Daisy gets started this October in Brunswick Heads before taking on Sydney, Melbourne, Canberra, Cairns, Brisbane and Perth.
And who is Douglas? Hannah Gadsby thinks he's the only pooch who can help her follow up on the trail blazed by her Emmy Award winning show Nanette.
Hannah found her voice with Nanette, and with Douglas she plans to use it.
Douglas kicks off in December, touring Melbourne, Hobart, Canberra, Sydney and Brisbane before visiting Auckland and Wellington. Some sessions are already sold out and the others are selling out fast, so get in quick.
And finally, an evening with David Sedaris is filled with storytelling, observations, unpublished tales, audience Q&As and book signings for the famous author.
A savant of razor-sharp and sardonic wit, don't miss your opportunity to spend an evening with one of the world's preeminent humour writers.
David Sedaris will visit Brisbane, Sydney, Melbourne, Adelaide and Canberra in January.
Head over to comedy.com.au for full touring details and to book tickets.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Now, you did 135 episodes of the podcast.
Did we?
You did 135.
Oh, no wonder we had to stop.
Oh, my God.
It doesn't feel an episode over 2,000.
And then you eventually wrapped it up. What was the reason for wrapping it up?
I think it was the fourth time we told the same shit boring story. We decided
that's never stopped
we had
us.
None.
No.
Yes, well, we're sensible.
It was pretty kind of relentless and exhausting. Like, I think we just needed a break and just the break just continued.
Fair enough.
And also, I think maybe, you know, to run its course.
It was also difficult, like, not having a studio and doing...
Oh,
like,
so you left Fox by that point?
Yeah, I left Fox. Yeah.
Right, okay.
And you just can't sit in the Melbourne Central Food Court.
Well, you were... This isn't a joke. You were genuinely recording the last episodes in a food court.
Yeah.
Sometimes in a food court. Once we recorded at a hotel buffet breakfast because we thought that would be hilarious.
Wes picked it and it was like really cheap or something like that.
Once at the beach. Like we just were choosing
and
weird places.
You just
places.
Can't sit there and like get smashed over the course of 9 hours.
We totally jumped the shark. And like that's all we did.
But also we couldn't use the phone anymore because we didn't have a hybrid system.
Studio,
So we couldn't have guests, which is where most of our content came from. So we're just down to us three fucking telling the same stories over
and
over again. But I think
really fundamentally it was just exhausting.
Yeah. It's a huge amount. I mean, especially if you're doing 9 hour
records. We record for 9 hours. But you've all got
actual jobs as well.
But then we would go out and drink for another 9 hours.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, that was
also
a problem. Then I stopped drinking and it wasn't as much fun.
And that would write you off for like, you know, the next day as well. Yeah. Like it was...
Because that's the thing that happens when you turn 40, which is why I had to stop drinking, was because the hangovers went from lasting till midday to lasting till Wednesday.
Like
it
was...
It just got really
more
intense.
And more time to rest.
It was really intense on that kind of physical level because you would fuck yourself up so bad. But also, like, you're dealing with intense material.
Yes.
You're sitting there talking about whatever you're talking about and someone writes you a letter about, you know, I live in the country and my life is shit and you're the...
Or the foreskins. The many
talking about foreskins constantly and, you know, and, like, I'm facetious about it, but kind of that sense of responsibility kind of weighs on you a little bit and... You know, doing that month in, month out in these kind of intense, like you would look forward to the talking poofy weekends, but it would exhaust you.
And then I got exhausted hacking the episodes into pieces and trying to reassemble them.
It was one thing to have to actually do them, but then to have to listen to them
again. Listen to them again and again and again. And once I left something very defamatory in that I meant to delete, which was horrific. No.
Great. Well, speaking of...
He's still in charge of entertainment at Channel 10 and I haven't worked there since.
Well, you're talking about recording in different locations. One of my favourite episodes, which actually turned into several episodes, was when you did the pub crawl. So for people that didn't... I mean, you guys have always said that was worse. I loved it. For people that didn't know what the pub crawl episode, which turned into seven episodes, can you explain how you did it and what it was?
We got drunk.
Ooh. Yeah.
And I turned the recorder on.
And this was, of course...
But we're wearing head mics.
Yeah, but this was at the time when there were a lot more venues open in Melbourne.
And you went
to
every single gay bar in Melbourne in one night.
We just went from bar to bar to bar and things just got out of hand.
Yeah. I recorded myself urinating in a laneway.
Yeah.
I love those episodes.
They're so good.
I still listen to them on occasion.
Piece. It should be in the fucking Louvre. Like...
Because they're actually really relaxing in a way. Because it is like a whole night in real time.
Yeah,
and
right.
Like we've all had those nights where you go out for a cheeky drink and like, you know, smash cut, you're rolling around a bedroom floor in Altona going, "Aah!
How did we get here?"
But it's literally, I mean, there's even like, I think almost an entire episode is you in the cab from Prince of Wales to DT's or something like that. But it's hilarious as well.
But that poor drag queen who's being so lovely to us and as soon as she shuts the door.
You hear the door shut and it's just like, oh, how fucking terrible is her breath? It's
That's right, yes. Oh, yes.
But what I love about it is that
And
it's
you even said, I won't repeat it, but you even said her name in the, like you were talking to her.
She was in the podcast. You could hear her speaking.
But like it's literally the whole night.
Yeah.
So like there's boring bits of it.
The same night you were at the Laird at some point and someone was sucking someone off next to you in the beer garden.
Oh, no, that was another night.
That was a different story. There was a nude guy that night at the Laird.
There was.
But there was one point in the live episode.
The rimming corner.
The rimming corner.
Yeah, that's right, the rimming corner. But there was one part of the live episode where Scott was going to pick up, and then when you got to DT's, I think, and this guy came over and was like, oh, thanks for coming around the other night, and you can hear him in the podcast. and then he's trying to pick you up again and doesn't notice you're wearing a microphone, so you like start chatting to him and being like, oh, I'll message you later, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. You weren't wearing microphones, were you?
No, they were handheld.
Oh, handheld, yeah. Sorry. Right.
They were big,
right.
Massive, yeah, fucking, yeah. Microphones.
They were like Channel 10 News.
Yeah. Amazing.
I have no memory of that, actually. Yeah. That
I'm not surprised. By the last episode, you were fucked.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, we were all... like. But one of the reasons for doing that was... I was not going to edit it. I just went, I'm just going to let it go from go to woe.
Yeah.
And
so just, you didn't cut bits out.
I just hacked,
actually, I listened to all
I
seven
just
recently.
Hacked it at the end and was like, oh, we'll be back next week. And then
it's the whole night. Yeah. It's the whole night.
It's the whole night over seven episodes.
God, like, I forgot how tiresome it is to hang out with you.
Yeah. So there's documentary proof. Yeah, yeah. You know?
How annoying we are.
But I love it for that reason.
People will be studying these podcasts in the future.
You go through those cycles of like, oh, this is fun. And then like, oh, actually, I'm going to check my phone because it's a bit dull.
Do you remember we went to that terrible bar that was the Exchange?
They were all terrible. Every single one of them was terrible.
But the one that was full of children... We were surrounded by kids who didn't know who we were.
You got attacked by a woman, didn't you? There was like a woman having a crack at
yes,
you, Toby.
Yes, there was some young girl who was really awkward about it. Was really like, I'm going to be an actor and I'm going to be a...
No, and she ended up being in Wentworth.
Really?
Did she?
Yes.
Did
she? She's the girl that pisses her pants in the start of episode
and
one.
That's how I met Pamela Rabe.
Wow. Yeah. Who knew, hey?
But also, Scott, you make an interesting point because I feel like that came out of an inflection point when it was quite clear going to like hideous bars like that, because most of the bars we went to were ghost towns.
Yeah. Mm.
The writing was on the wall.
Commercial Road was closing, dying, essentially.
Yeah, but it was closing. It hadn't closed yet. Mm. And we were like, you know, some kind of weird fucking David Attenborough.
We were
the
like
last
Mama Rose in Gypsy. Yes. Trying to get on the Orpheum circuit. Yeah. And all we could get was Burlesque.
It's weird. Yeah, it's kind of happened in Melbourne and it happened in Sydney for different reasons as well. It's almost like the whole kind of gay scene has changed.
Also, I mean, this was something that we kind of investigated a lot in, you know, our later years in our laugh programs. Was
in between gardening tips.
Yeah. That's right. Was the kind of, you know, this quest for acceptance and this quest for equality and marriage equality and all that kind of thing, and how what we were essentially saying is that we no longer wanted this ghettoization. We didn't want to hang out together. We didn't want to have a culture anymore because that is the only price that there is to pay for acceptance by the wider community.
I would say the culture has changed. I wouldn't say it's disappeared.
No.
But it was a culture of...
Urban culture has eroded. Yeah.
But it was a culture
centralized,
of,
I think,
of visibility, and it was a culture of protest. Like, you know, it was a culture of like trying to agitate for things, and now we don't have to agitate anymore. And it's like... So for our generation,
I think people are still agitating.
I think there are still things to agitate for, but the stuff that we were agitating for is kind of...
We've got all our stuff. We all just go to Bunnings on the weekend now. We've got no reason to fucking...
No, but I did actually have a question about this. You know, a lot of the bars since you guys finished the podcast have closed, the GH Exchange... Mm. Diva, some for good, some not. but I kind of feel like it's all that's really happened is we've decentralized. There's a lot of bars now that are happy to have a gay night once a week or open up in different
areas.
Also,
you don't need to get hammered to pick anyone up anymore. You can just do it on your fucking phone while you're watching Frasier repeats. Like, on 10 Peach.
While it's great that there are gay bars out there that have a gay night once a week or whatever.
It's not going into the gay community, is what you're
saying. You're not taking space.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean? This is the virtue of having like an established
venue.
Fucking Grunty McFuckerin rainbow flag out the front, you know, go-go boy poster.
No more than four dykes at
gay
once.
Boy. Yeah, yeah, yeah. is it you are taking physical space, which I feel is different, not better or worse.
Yeah.
Than sharing
than
space
kind of
with everybody.
Sort of, yeah.
But I mean, Grunty McFuckering is actually a really good point there because I've always felt like the reason that places like Commercial Road, so if anyone interstate or overseas listening, the Commercial Road was our little gay ghetto where all the gay
like
bars
Oxford
were.
Street.
Oxford yeah, exactly.
Street.
And it's exactly the same trajectory
but
as
it's,
Oxford Street.
It, you know, as I feel like what happened is that Commercial Road was, the market was charging like $20 on like a Thursday night to get in. I think they sort of had a monopoly on gay, there was the only places that gays could go. And so as it became okay to be gay, other venues started looking at how much money these bars were charging and making and started doing their own nights and that sort of thing.
And also I think as acceptance kind of, you know, broadened out that more straight people would start coming to
And they're annoying.
They are.
And so it kind of became this kind of muddy thing. It was like, you know, well, it's kind of a more of a mixed space now.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, the idea of a sort of gay bar is, I don't know if there's a time limit on
there must
on
still
it
be much. Gay bars.
There
I
are.
Went to Oxford just... Street the other day. There were three drag queens in a gutter.
Yes.
Outside the Stone Wall.
They're always there. They're always there.
One of them was Wes.
Yeah. I think they've actually just been cemented in. They can't move.
Oh, it's a sculpture.
Trevor Ashley.
I mean, I think what is happening now, not to
you know,
sound too much like...
the last time I got drunk was with Trevor Ashley.
That's true.
That will turn you off out drinking ever again. Spending a night with Trevor Ashley.
Yes.
Sorry, you were saying.
Look, without sounding too much like AM radio, I feel like queer space is increasingly sort of diffused through the digital space.
Yes.
You know,
ooh.
I think that there's a lot of kind of meme culture, you know, all the Drag Race memes and that kind of stuff. Like, I often think about that kind of stuff in terms of Polari, in terms of like coded language and coded references and that kind of stuff. And I think that's where gay kids now can kind of find a common ground. It's a digital ground, not a physical ground like a gay bar. But the trouble with that is that it's
you don't want your digits in Scott's ground.
You want your digits in Scott's ground. That's that's more porous. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, there's not very much risk in sharing a drag race race meme, but to go to a gay bar on a gay night, like that investment
is
risk.
Very good to
on your BMX.
Online, but it's very important to have actual friends in person who are like you as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And also, and having said that you know, all these things have changed and spaces have changed, it's still hard to get that information about the reality, the sort of stuff that we provided and now the Gays Are Revolting provides.
Well,
that stuff still hasn't become mainstream.
That's true. Right. The warts and all
RuPaul's Drag Race isn't really talking about like the hardcore stuff.
Yeah, no. RuPaul's not telling you how many fingers actually constitutes a fist. Like, when have you crossed the line?
And the answer is
all of them.
You have to call Dean back.
I'm sure we've got some pamphlets on that on it somewhere. Yeah.
But I've always felt like you guys, your show was sort of a predecessor to our show.
Are we your drag godfather? Oh, what are they called?
I don't know what No, I'm not going to give you that. I'm not going to go that far. But how did
Daddy
you
Thomas.
Feel when our...
Call me Daddy.
But how did you feel when our podcast started early last year?
Wanted to burn you. When I first heard about it and then listened to it, like for about 0.5 of a second, I was like, but it's kind of like what we did. And then I was like, oh, I'm glad someone's fucking doing it.
Yeah.
It's good.
Yeah.
Because
it's fucking exhausting.
Yeah.
Right?
And it's really good. Mm. I don't want to blow
smoke. And I think the fact that it's been so successful too.
Yeah.
Really affirms the fact that
there's a need for it.
There is a community in search of a flashpoint.
A community.
In search of a flashpoint.
Yeah.
You know? Whether it's a physical space such as a gay bar or a digital space like a podcast, there's people out there who have a desire or feel a gap around these kind of really authentic interactions. Like there's genuine discussions.
Also, you know, like ostensibly what talking the Puffcast was three friends sharing stuff and talking and chatting. And particularly for people, and that's how you learn all the kind of nitty gritty, those little details. And so for people who don't have access to maybe, you know, those friends or feel a bit isolated, to be able to listen into a conversation like this, really important.
You know, like every now and again you have like a thing that happens and you go, oh, that's right, that's why I do this. Like it's not just to get drunk with my mates and hear horrendous stories. There was a guy who emailed me. He lived in country Queensland and was like, look, you seem so confident for a fat guy. I was like, yes, because I am. And he goes, how do you deal with the whole sex thing? Like, you know, being a boomba. And I was like, you know, you just do. I was like, why? What's like? And I was trying to get out of him, like, why he was having so much trouble. And then he said, whenever I go out with my friends to the beat in Brisbane, I'm like, oh, for fuck's sake. It's a creche.
Yeah.
Oh, right. The oldest person there is 20. They're all horrendous twinks. I was like, go down the road to Sportsman's Bar, like Sporties in Brisbane. It's horrible, but, you know, you'll be the belle of the ball. You'll be the big, fat belle of the ball and everyone will want to come out. You get put on an online profile where everyone can see your man boobs and you will have... People will be sending you pictures of their pouting sphincters in no time.
Wow.
And it happened. He was very excited by the whole experience.
Did you see the pictures of the pouting sphincters?
No, I wasn't into him.
All right.
He was a child.
I think I vaguely got the compliment I was looking for.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. Now, Adam, you've often been billed as Australia's first openly gay comedian. How does that title sit with you?
I wasn't.
Really?
There were others. But who else? Mr. Humphreys wasn't Australian. Toby was doing it before me.
I don't remember that. You say that, but I don't remember that.
You were before. Like, you were already there when I arrived.
What was I doing?
On the gay,
I don't
on the
know.
Gay comedy
trivia scene. Nights with Janet.
Oh, but yeah. I do that. That doesn't count.
Yeah, no, it doesn't
yeah but
count.
That's performing. And you were doing stand-up. You'd go and do gigs here and there.
I don't remember it very clearly.
I remember Scott's first gig, which was not long after mine, like 6 months or maybe 8 months
possibly.
Or something.
Yeah, it was. They were all
so,
close
yeah,
together.
I don't like to think, like, maybe the first one on Hey Hey It's Saturday.
Right, okay. Mm.
Or something like that.
Mm.
However.
Yeah. However.
However, like, in terms of public profile and and things that, you know, the great unwashed latch onto, it was still an important moment when you began work.
And I think, like, you know, whenever anyone used to be like, how could you do Celebrity Splash or Celebrity Dog School or that terrible radio show? It's like, yeah, but this is just about visibility. It's like, you know, especially with the radio, it's like 10-year-old kids are being dropped off to school by their mums who are listening to the radio, hearing that annoying poof to talk about Lindsay Lohan again. and then 10 years later can come out and go, oh, mum, you know how you like Adam on the radio? Yes, well, I'm gay also.
Yeah.
Oh, it's a pity you're not funny. Like,
talk about Lindsay Lohan more.
You talked about Lindsay Lohan. I might like you. Now clean your room. you filthy little twink. But it's like, because I only ever really agreed to do family shows.
Yeah.
Like, so yeah, like Celebrity Dog School and Celebrity Splash were sold to me as family shows.
Yeah.
Less like having a gay agenda, which for me is just, what am I doing on Thursday? But more about, like, just being someone there. Like we were saying before about any kind of visibility. I've recently watched the whole of the Netflix Tales of the City, which is dreadful.
Right.
It's a really bad show. But I loved it. Because it was like, I felt like I was, you know, 15 again and seeing someone who had a life something like mine on television.
Yep. It wasn't all about just sort of sitting about throw pillows and, you know, that kind of stuff. Just
it was Ellen Page just having threesomes all the time, which is, you know, fun.
On a more maybe personal note then, a lot of the podcast was about drinking. We just talked about how much champagne you would drink and you did the live show going to the bars and there was a lot of trashy stories about getting fucked up. Adam, you've stopped drinking. You've also, for anyone who's been following you on social media, you've been jogging as well, which I'm quite impressed of.
And people are jogging. I just walk quicker than normal.
Quicker than you used to. You've lost a lot of weight.
I refer to it as escaping.
It might sound quite surprising to people that are familiar with the Talking Puffy Puffcast. What inspired that?
There was no way any of us could sustain that kind of lifestyle, what we were doing.
No. It was fucked. There was
just
really
no way.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you two still drink, though.
Nowhere near anywhere.
Not like those days. My God.
I haven't been drunk
physically
in a long
can't.
Time. Yeah.
Like, you remember in your 20s, you're like a fucking tennis ball. You bounce back the next day. In your 30s, you're like a tennis ball that a dog's had a go at.
Yep.
It's kind of wet and it sticks to the ground a little bit before it comes back up.
In your 40s, it's like throwing a kind of a goon bag. It just kind of goes boom, just that.
It just lands.
It doesn't move.
And never rebounds. Yeah. It just sits there
and wobbles. It off the concrete. No.
Yeah. And so you have to get someone to come over and pick it up 3 days later and take it to work.
Yeah, with tongs.
The last time I got drunk, I had a horrific hangover and I called my sister. I was like, you have to bring me McDonald's because I am incapable of movement.
And Uber Eats was born.
Oh, man, if there was Uber Eats, I would still I would still be drinking and I would be, I'd probably be dead.
Yeah.
But yeah, like it was a night out with Trevor Ashley and it was like I was out till 4 a.m, I think.
Yeah.
Never really had a great time. Like, it was fun. I'd been to Anthony Kalia's concert and hung out with his family and drunk some. I think you were there that night.
I think I was,
We drank a bit and then went out further and I just kept drinking and I never got to that, you know, giddy
fun.
You know, like a 9-hour Talking Puffy record and then off to the K box. And then off to like went on Wellington because there's a bar there.
Oh,
like,
Jesus Christ.
Worst thing about went on Wellington was like everyone would have like the nice forest green towel, and they would give me the Boomba towel, which was fucking hot pink. Like, you can't tell I'm fat coming down the street. You know, I need to put an arrow on it. But yeah, we'd all, like, so they were always fun. Like, we'd always have fun. So the next day you would feel, yeah, I've got a hangover, but I had a fun night. But this night, like, you know, other, like, you know, just had fucking Trevor in my face going, I'm doing like Miss Darling. It's going to be amazing. You'll love it. I can't wait for you to see it. And then, yeah, the next day I felt awful. And I was like, I feel like I earned this.
Yeah.
And I think it was just like a moment of, I am really old and fat. And this is another thing. Like, since losing weight, I'm like, oh, I wasn't really that old. I was just fat.
Yeah.
Like, it's really hard to do anything when you're fat.
Initially, it wasn't like a conscious decision to permanently quit drinking, was it? It was just sort of like you were having a break.
I had a couple of weeks off. Some young strumpet took a job that I've been doing for 10 years and then lost it within 3 months. That upset me. Mm-hmm. So I got a bit depressed and tried to take antidepressants. But because my liver was not functioning, it all went through. So I was vacuuming to Dancing Queen and like speeding off my head and was like, rang my doctor. I went, am I meant to be this happy? She's like, oh, no, don't take another one. So it. Yeah, and then yeah, I stopped drinking and it recovered. So
oh,
I know, it's tragic. But that's the main reason I lost weight, is because my liver function started to pack in again, and I was like, I can't even have schnitzel anymore.
You're enjoying the fitness now.
I do, actually. It's weird. I didn't expect to.
Yeah, I mean, knowing you then and knowing you, like, if I would never have guessed you'd be the kind of person posting, you know, you do these wonderful
Fitspo.
Walks. Yeah, exactly.
It's,
good on you.
It's, yeah. And seriously, like, for anyone who is at the bottom of a hangover going, oh, this feels terrible. I'm like, at the end of the first 5 kilometers of running, you get the same rush as that first half an hour of an E. Like, and then the shower afterwards is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh man, I could have been doing this all
and
along.
You can reach all of your bits now.
Oh,
in
yeah.
In the shower.
And then some. And I have to do stretching when I'm squeegeeing the glass. Gary says I've got to clean the glass and I have a shower.
So domestic.
Oh, no.
And Scotty, you were the rampant slut of the pool. You
know, it's funny. Don't say were.
You are. It's you referred to yourself as the rampant slut, and our producer wrote the question as rampant slut, and then we asked listeners that had listened to your podcast, our listeners, if they had any questions, and someone asked if you're still the rampant slut. So you're well known as the rampant slut.
Okay, great.
You know, before we did our very first podcast recording, we sat down to have a chat about, you know, what we were going to do, what our roles would be, and for some reason, we kept saying very loudly that Scott was going to be the Guatemalan sinkhole.
Yeah.
I remember that.
Yeah.
So I was pressured into it, basically.
Did you ever wrestle with how far you were going to go with this? I mean, you were very honest with your stories. Did you ever, like, toss and turn about whether you should go that far?
No, not really. I've got a very dear friend of mine who's a sex therapist.
Mm-hmm.
And I've learned lots. Cindy, yes.
She was a guest on the podcast.
She was, yes, Cindy Dunnell. And she... she's amazing. And so I kind of like, just from knowing her, I kind of learned a lot. And it's a bit of a wanky thing, but it's all about kind of sex positivity. And I'm not going to be fucking ashamed for having sex. And so that's why, you know, that was kind of part of the reason.
And we will keep shame on you, but it just comes off like water off a duck's back.
Yeah.
And into your hole.
Totally, yes.
And a lot of people might be surprised as well to hear that you... of all people, have a child now.
Yes, I do. I have a son.
Can you tell us?
He jizzed in a bag. It's not that hard.
Don't you call her a bag.
I was living with him while they were working on this. He jizzed in several bags.
Yes.
And then had some of them removed with a syringe.
That's right, yes.
Did you really have a needle in the neck?
What? No.
No?
No,
like it was.
No, it was all fresh. We tried on our own. All fresh.
I don't think your semen has ever been described by anyone as fresh.
I bought some along, guys. Here, have some. There we go. There's some here.
Some of Scott's baby batter.
A lesbian couple, dear friends of mine, asked me to be the father of their child, and we now have a little boy called Leo who's nearly 4.
And absolutely fucking
he's
adorable.
He's very cute.
He is gorgeous. He's pretty nice. So I'm like Uncle Dad.
Yeah. I was at a Christmas party once with your son. You weren't allowed to be there because of those rules. But And every time someone new came into the room, like his eyes lit up and he sat up. I was like, oh, it's just like daddy.
This is trolling. He's trolling for trade.
And well, the good thing about it is that, like, it's pretty much, it doesn't matter what he kind of comes up, if he's ever facing any kind of problem as a teenager or anything like that. I've done much worse.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I really.
He can always come to you and you're not going to judge.
I will never judge that boy.
I feel kind of privileged to have known you quite well for that journey. Can you tell us a bit about how the dynamic, I think it's an amazing dynamic that you have with his mums. Can you tell us what the dynamic is and how you guys worked that out? What it was going to be?
In a nutshell, we've known each other for like 20 years.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of like Uncle Dad, that we believe it takes a village to raise a child.
Surely Auntie Dad in your auntie.
Well, depends on whether I'm having a high camp day.
You're the fairy godfather.
Yes. But so I'm kind of like, I see him every week. Couple of times sometimes, just as often as I can. I'm just like first on the list for babysitting and hanging out and spending time.
And they live
and
pretty close to you.
Yeah, they live only a few blocks from me, so I get to hang out with him lots. And yeah, it's great. And there's like kind of, there are other people kind of in the village helping to raise in this kind of whole kind of community. So he's doing pretty well.
So they're outsourcing their parenting.
Pretty
lazy,
much,
lazy, lazy.
Oh, he's so annoying. One of the weirdest things he said to me though, was because his mother said to me, you have to teach him to wee standing up. Because we can't.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that was not in the PD.
I had never considered that. I was like, okay. And I was looking after him one day and I had to have a wee and I was like, well, I guess this is it. I guess this is when I teach him to, I'm going to go have a wee. Right? And he always follows me to the toilet anyway and tries to come in when I'm having a poo, which is really weird. But I was, I sort of stood there and I said, okay, got my penis out and, you got to hold it like this and you got to aim it. You got to make sure that,
it doesn't go all over the place.
All that kind of stuff.
Because with two mothers, that's going to be a problem.
And he just kind of like leant around and stared at my penis for a moment.
Oh, you probably never seen another one.
Well, I don't know. But then looked up at me and went, why do you have that doodle? Which is a really difficult question to answer.
In fairness, Scott, you've had a fair crack at shopping a range of
that's
others.
That's right.
Yeah, true.
That was
probably never seen a purple one before.
Well, I know. So that's just bruising. That's just
or one with bite marks in it.
He's never seen one with a used by date stand on it before.
Everybody signs it once they've had a crack, so it's just covered in text.
It's like a car. It's like a plastic car.
I stood up to wee for the first time in, like, I reckon about 4 years the other day.
Right.
Now, a big part of your show was responding to listeners' letters. You had some wonderful writers that we talked about, Tim,
mainly people complaining about their foreskins and their partners wanting
them
to cut them
off. There was a lot of foreskin questions.
There was so much foreskin, and it would go for weeks and weeks and weeks, and then it would. And I couldn't give a flying.
The foreskin would go for weeks.
Fuck what
and
you
and
do
weeks.
With it. And I would be sitting there. I'd be like reading a book. I'd be filing my nails. Yeah. I'd be catching
doing
up on
taxes,
emails, whatever. And it would finally die down. And then fucking Wesley would bring it up again.
Look, we do get people writing in. Usually it's people, because we usually talk about topics that are happening. We record week to week. But every now and then we get people writing and asking for advice. And we generally don't respond to those because we are not equipped to give advice.
Neither were we.
No, neither were we. It's just people want to hear someone else's opinion full stop.
True, true.
Responsibility never troubled us. We're not a doctor, but we're prepared to have a look.
Occasionally, if we had like an important letter, we would call someone that had, Scott would draw on Cindy or we'd call Batruni or someone.
And then we'd disagree with them and just say, whatever the fuck we actually thought ourselves anyway.
Well, I found a message we got on Facebook a little while ago that we haven't responded to. And I thought maybe you guys could respond
to good.
This person.
You're letting us go through your moldy old emails.
Asking for advice.
From a young man in Nigeria.
called Bevan.
Prince Bevan.
In the interest of continuity from your podcast, let's say that this email is from Bevan.
Yeah.
Okay, this is from Bevan, who says, hello, boys. Love the podcast.
I put that bit in, but...
And also, it's referring to your podcast.
Yeah, is he referring to your podcast? Yeah. Oh, hang on. I'll start again. Hello, boys. I'm hoping for some advice from some city boys. Why does he keep using the word boys? Is he a pedophile? I recently moved to Melbourne from a very small town in New South Wales. I'm 33 years old, and it's the first time I've lived in a city.
Oh. It's the first time I lived in a city. I'd like to know how the shoes work.
I've been partying a lot. Hey, Scott. But I've made some friends, but most of them are younger than me. What did I say? I haven't met many people my age who party. Maybe they partied when they were younger and they're all done already.
I'm really suspicious of someone who uses the word party. Yeah, four times.
I think it's a euphemism for chemsex.
It's Andrew W.K. Okay.
Yeah.
has sent us a letter.
Is it tragic that I'm still going out? I don't really like Grindr or Tinder, i.e., I'm illiterate. I don't know what all those fucking acronyms mean. Where do I meet guys my age in their 30s? Also, I didn't get much sex practice back home because there wasn't much opportunity.
Did he say sex
even
practice?
Practice is cute. And the sheep were very
going?
Fussy.
I'm going out to sex practice. Yeah. I'll be back about 9.
Got the grand final coming up, so, you know, got to get in as much as I can.
I've been practicing really hard, and I am representing New South Wales in sex.
I didn't get much sex practice because there wasn't much opportunity.
Stop saying sex practice.
So I'm a bit scared to go home with guys. Aww.
I'm just imagining like one of those automatic tennis ball firing machines. Just shooting out dildos.
Damn, like, missed again. No, you can do it, Bevan. Keep trying.
Just keep puck it up and one will go in.
What are your anus steel rings?
Oh, I feel bad. This poor Bevan.
Bevan says.
I'm a bit
That's
scared.
Right. Practice makes perfect, Bevan.
I'm a bit scared to go home with guys in case I'm bad at it.
Oh.
How do I learn what to do? Oh. Well, look, Scott's bad at it and he still gets it.
I made a career at it, yeah.
Everyone is bad at it. No one is good at it.
I wonder about this podcast that we're guesting on. Mm. That they're all full of bravado and like, oh, we're amazing at sex. We're all incredible. And here's rancid old queen just it's terrible.
I would say to Bevan, there are still guys in their 30s. Like, you're 33. There are still guys in their 30s going in. Maybe you're going to the wrong venues.
Yeah.
Maybe you're going to the venues that are attracting kind of the younger crowd. To, you know, have a bit of a look around and see what other venues there are. There might be some older guys.
There's not many venues, though, don't forget.
That's true. Get on Scruff.
Yes. Mm.
Get on Scruff.
Oh, but that's full of skrinks. Like,
what are skrinks?
They're twinks that don't shave.
Oh, okay. But there's a bit more, maybe there'll be more
twinks.
Of a,
lazy twinks.
You know, guys around your age on Scruff than...
The other thing with, like, being 33, you know, it doesn't happen as much, but it still happens, where people come out of the closet in their 30s after having tried to have a relationship with a woman and going, who am I kidding? I love cock. And
that's how it feels.
It does. But those people reset. I think you have to reset their sexual and emotional age to 16.
Yes.
When
yes,
they come true, out. So true. You don't feel bad that you're hanging out with a bunch of people in their 20s because emotionally, like this is your first time in the big city, hanging out and being able to root anyone at any time.
Yeah.
You are technically in your 20s emotionally and in that kind of, you know, societal age. So... who's shaming you into thinking you're... I know I just said you're a pedophile, but I'm not one to...
That was supportive shaming, Adam. That was supportive shaming. That wasn't nasty shaming.
But also, if you like hanging out with guys just because they're younger, these guys, you know, if you like them, who gives a shit what age they are?
Yeah. What if we read between the other lines and he's not attracted to all these children and he wants to bump uglies with someone a bit older? Because everyone in their 20s is all... breaking up and making up within minutes. But in your 30s, everyone's all paired off. And it's not until you get into your 40s and you're like, oh, I can still fuck people. And it's fine. But yeah, it's like there's that weird period in your 30s where everyone is in a relationship except for you.
Yeah.
Yes.
So that could be a problem.
And this kind of goes back to the idea that we were talking before about like acceptance and kind of gay diffusion. You know what I mean? Like there is a balance between living on the scene and, you know, hanging out on Scruff or going to, you know, Laird or you know, whatever it is, and just like living your life.
Yeah. Mm.
And, you know, meeting your gay person in accounts or your, you know, your potential husband as the barista or doing CrossFit with them. You know what I mean? Like they're in the world.
Yeah.
And they're probably a bit more easier to meet.
Not everybody meets their partner in a gay club.
Yeah.
No.
Like that, you know.
I've heard that is true.
Apparently.
I have heard of that happening.
I met mine on the internet.
Really?
Yeah, I bought him off eBay.
Oh, Well, thank you so much. I hope that that has helped, Bevan. I hope you're listening.
Did we say anything worthwhile?
I think, yes. Bevan, like, when I was in my 30s, I was single and partying a lot. And the other thing I did was try to find places where I thought people my age would be going, like, book clubs and, you know, other boring shit. And it turned out they're as boring as I thought they would be. So I continued to take a lot of cocaine and get bummed off at it.
Yeah, okay. I don't know if that's...
You do you.
Yeah.
You
do you. I'm fine. My liver doesn't work, but I'm fine.
Now, before we go, one more question for the main episode today that I have to ask, because our listeners and your listeners would be very upset if I didn't. Are we ever going to get any more episodes of Talking Puffy?
This is it.
I think
this
you just got one.
This is it.
This is the one. I think you did. Yeah.
Enjoy it while it drags on.
Yes.
I honestly don't think it would work today.
Because I think that, we couldn't.
Well, I'm racist.
Yeah.
Oh my God. When I think about the jokes we made, my God.
Oh my God.
It's
a different time.
We have to.
It wasn't a different time. It was 5 years ago.
It was 2012.
But also, I think if we did an episode of Talking Puffy again, that we wouldn't drink, so it would just be us like we have today, just reminiscing about all the times we got drunk together. That's all the episode.
It's
that's
just
all it
us
would be.
Talking See, about the war.
There'd be no new material.
Your livers are all still working, so you're happily taking the torch
weekend,
from
I just
us.
Had
And well, you've taken off on the mantle, so you know, I think, you know, we need to let you guys.
Oh, what a lovely book!
Fly.
Oh,
wow.
Thank you so much. We might release a gardening puffy or a decoupaging puffy, or
yes,
you know.
Well, at the very least,
men's shed puffy.
Will you come back on our show again?
Sure.
Yay!
Yeah. Well,
sure.
Wonderful. That's good news.
Can we have a different puffer? Because we know you.
All right. I'll let
you're
Luke
not going
to
fuck
time.
Scott. It'll be funny. Like if
let's get a different one. Let's
get
a different one.
Actually, no. We will get one of them. I know. Yeah, Luke and Scott will get along very well.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
Awesome. Okay, great.
They're both whores.
No, they're the opposites. Like it's like magnets.
Yeah.
They bump up against
one
another.
I don't do that anymore, guys. I do. I'm a whore. I'm a fucking whore.
Scott, failure has changed you.
Well, thank you, boys, so much for joining us. Now, you are going to hang around with us for the after show.
Oh, what? You have an after show?
We have an after show. So what we're going to do...
This is why we couldn't do Talking Puffy anymore. We're going to barely do the on show.
Yeah.
It's like an afterbirth.
We're gonna like bash through a whole lot of topics that we've talked about on The Gays Revolting.
That sounds very violent.
We should bash through
anything.
And we're gonna get your opinions. We're gonna do like 20 quick topics.
I'm against it.
You want things that have happened since
your show ended that we've been talking about, right. And see what you guys think.
Are we
about
even gonna understand these?
No, maybe not. But we'll find out. Okay. But before we do that, thank you so much for joining us. It's been an absolute pleasure having you on. For anyone that wants to listen to the after show, you can tune in patreon.com/gaysrevoltingpod.
Bonus episode. Not even a good one.
For anyone that wants to listen to your show, it's no longer on Apple, unfortunately, but you can listen to it on your website, which is talkingpuffy.com.
.au.
talkingpuffy.com.au.
I am just laughing at the idea that someone is still paying the hosting fees for that.
That's me. I pay that.
I still listen. I love it.
Like, I get alerts every time someone downloads one, and at least 4 times a week.
Oh, that's me. That's just me.
Someone send that gay piece of shit $25 for the next 2 years. Yeah. Someone has got to help Adam out.
If you want to follow our socials, you can follow us on Instagram @GaysRevoltingPod, on Twitter @GaysRevolting, and on Facebook @TheGaysAreRevolting. Boys, thank you so much for joining us. Sorry, I forgot to tell you in a second. You all have to say bye. Like,
bye.
Okay.
Are you ready?
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. 1, 2, 3.
Bye.
Bye.
Well done, everybody.
Well done.
Boy. You've done a very good job.
When do I stop saying bye?
I'm going to have a nap.
Oh, okay.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.